Well, last week we had such a sweet time together to celebrate and enjoy a day to just revel in the fact that Jesus Christ is risen from the dead. And I know that, there's a certain energy about that, a certain enthusiasm about that that we all have and enjoy. I know children are dismissed to children's church. I was going to just go on, but I saw so many of you smiling. Yeah. And I know that we really, really enjoyed hearing from Pastor Bonda. And I just want to thank you, Bonda, for such a great, powerful word. What an awesome celebration. Great things I know personally ministered to me and things I really never had thought of or noticed before, but what a tremendous exchange. The crown of thorns that Jesus took and giving us in return. So many crowns. And I know you were probably thinking, as I was, about how we like to sing, that there's coming a day, coming a time when we will cast all of our golden crowns around the glassy sea, and that's the whole point of having those crowns, is so that we have something to give to Jesus, because all of it belongs to him. So I want to thank you, brother, for that awesome message, and thank you, church, for a great day of celebration. And I know that, like I said, there's this sense of enthusiasm and energy and life that we share together on Easter Sunday. We look forward to it. It builds up. We know what it is. And when it comes, then that morning, we all feel it. And we're saying to one another, he is risen. Yeah. I just want to point out, though, this morning, that for the disciples and for all the people who followed him, even as the stories were starting to break out, no one was saying, he is risen indeed. Eventually they got there, but certainly not that morning. No one was saying that. There was an aftermath that was, I don't know how else it could be described other than just raw trauma. There was an aftermath to what had just taken place that, in spite of everything that they had been told by Jesus directly and with great clarity, what was going to happen and why, all of that was completely gone from their minds. None of it had stuck in their hearts through this experience. And on the morning that these things started to happen and they started to hear what sounded like delirious rumors from some of their own, it didn't change at all at first what it was that they were experiencing. It was heartbreak. It was loss. It was grief. It was a sickening sense of shock. It was sorrow. It was fear, just paralyzing fear. And most of all, it was just trauma. And so really, and I'm not trying to be a downer on the week after Easter, but I'm just saying that really that morning, no one was saying he is risen. In fact, probably some people were saying the opposite. Probably some people who had heard him say and loved him were saying, no, he's not. He's not risen. I don't know what's happening, but it's not that. What they were saying, and as we read the accounts, we hear this repeatedly, what they were saying is his body is missing. That's what they were saying. How about that for an Easter greeting? His body is missing. Right? That's what was happening. They didn't even get to the point where they could say, it's missing indeed. They were saying, what do you mean missing? What do you mean missing? Well, surely there's some explanation. And so some, were scrambling, trying to figure it out, and the story about running to the tomb and standing there and holding those empty grave linens. It's in Luke 24, where we're going to spend a lot of our time this morning, and there's this moment where you see Peter, And in Luke 24, 12, Peter, however, got up and ran to the tomb. Bending over, he saw the strips of linen lying by themselves, and he went away just wondering what had happened. We'll get to the rest of it in a moment. But that's the picture. Even as the stories began, even as the rumors started to circulate, they heard the women, and the women told about this, these angels, and they didn't know what to make of it, and they ran, and there's just Peter just standing there holding these grave clothes and just wondering what happened. And I tell you, he was not thinking to himself, he's risen. He was thinking, where's his body? Where's the body? Wondering what had happened, and almost you can almost kind of feel, as you read through that account, the scene closes right there with Peter just sort of hanging there wondering what had happened. Well, in the midst of their sickening shock and their fear, their grief, their trauma, they were just broken. Everyone who loved Jesus was broken. And everyone else, it's a kind of astonishing to think about all the things that happened surrounding Jesus' crucifixion that even for those who were just watching would have been so mysterious, so strange, so moving, and so concerning, and so odd. You know, the curtain being torn from top to bottom by no one. The sun just going black in the middle of the day. Earthquakes, both when he died and then also on 3 days later. There's even a testimony in one of the Gospels about how when he died and the earth shook, that graves were opened and dead people walked out. And it's shocking. I mean, they move on from there. We don't get to hear what happened. I don't know where those people went. I don't know how that panned out. I have no idea. I just know there were some really strange things happening around. So even the people who weren't following Jesus and just there were just in shock. What in the world, right? Now, Jesus had said to his disciples so many times what was going to happen. And on one of those occasions, it was back in Matthew 26, he had just shared with them the bread and the cup at the Last Supper, and then Jesus told them, "This very night you will all fall away on account of me, for it is written," and then he quotes from Zechariah 13, "I will strike the shepherd, and the sheep of the flock will be scattered. But after I have risen, I will go ahead of you into Galilee." And that's the story where Peter says, "No, I will never forsake you. I will never leave you," right? And you know what happened with that story. But it was there that Jesus said from Zechariah, the prophet, that the shepherd would be struck and all of the sheep would be scattered. And really, when you look at the aftermath of even the rumors of the resurrection at first, that's what we're still seeing. That's what's still happening. The sheep are all scattered. One of them had gone off and in great sorrow hung himself. One of them had denied Jesus 3 times, just like he was told he would, swore that he wouldn't, and when he did at that third time in the rooster crowed, Jesus, in the midst of suffering and agony and in the midst of torture, looked right at him. And Peter wept bitterly and ran out. Others were struggling with all kinds of doubt and fear, and they were hiding because they didn't know if they were next. They didn't know what to happen. And we're picking up here in Luke 24, where two of the followers of Jesus, these weren't numbered among the 11 disciples who remained, but they were still followers of Jesus, and two of them are walking on this road away from Jerusalem towards the town of Emmaus. And that's where we're going to pick up together now in Luke 24, verse 13. So let me read for you verse 13 through 27. "Now that same day, two of them were going to a village called Emmaus, about 7 miles from Jerusalem. And they were talking with each other about everything that happened. And as they talked and discussed these things with each other, Jesus himself came up and walked along with them, but they were kept from recognizing him. He asked them, "What are you discussing together as you walk along?" And they stood still, their faces downcast. And one of them, named Cleopas, asked him, "Are you the only one visiting Jerusalem who does not know the things that have happened there in these days?" "What things?" he asked. "About Jesus of Nazareth," they replied. "He was a prophet, powerful in word and deed before God and all the people. The chief priests and our rulers handed him over to be sentenced to death, and they crucified him. But we had hoped that he was the one who was going to redeem Israel. And since, and what is more, it is the third day since all this took place. In addition, some of our women amazed us. They went to the tomb early this morning, but they didn't find his body. They came and told us that they had seen a vision of angels who said that he was alive. And then some of our companions went to the tomb and found it just as the woman had said, but they did not see Jesus." And he said to them, "How foolish you are, and how slow to believe that all that the prophets have spoken. Did not the Messiah have to suffer these things and then enter his glory? And then, beginning with Moses and all the prophets, he explained to them what was said in all the scriptures concerning himself." Well, this story is probably has to be one of the most loved stories that we have of the unfolding of the resurrection, the revelation of the resurrection, because it has all of this this heartbreak and grief and loss and sorrow that they're experiencing. And it's not just and all of a sudden they saw Jesus and there he was. There's this exchange where they're talking with him, but they don't know it's him. I don't know how exactly the Lord did that. Obviously, well within his abilities, as someone who just rose from the dead, then certainly keeping someone from recognizing him is no big deal. Probably one of the reasons why they failed to recognize him is because they didn't believe him earlier. And the last thing that they ever expected was that they were going to see him. No one was expecting to see Jesus risen from the dead. No one. And so there he was talking with them, and you can see it, we feel it. I mean, we can't help but smile in some parts of this story because it's just dripping with the most delicious irony, isn't it? I mean, sometimes irony happens in the Bible, and it's kind of sad. But this one is just so, so good, you know? It's so great, and I don't know if you imagine yourself in that position, being one of those people who are walking there and talking to Jesus. Maybe you imagine that you would have recognized Jesus. I don't know, we tend to imagine ourselves as maybe, you know, being able to see things that the others didn't. But of course, you know, we wouldn't know. Jesus would have been talking to us. We wouldn't have expected that he was going to be alive. And his identity was concealed from them as they talked. And so the whole reason why we find them walking on this road in this direction is because they are so brokenhearted. I mean, think about where they're going and where they're coming from. All of the other 11 disciples are there in Jerusalem. The other followers of Jesus are also there in Jerusalem. These two have already heard stories from the women that had gone to see the empty tomb, who had come back and said, "He's missing. His body's missing. We saw the angels. The angels said he's alive." And they said, "Women." It's true. It's true. Luke 24:11. Look it up. Look it up later. And then they said, "Some of our companions, some of the men, they went and they saw too." And they still left. Why? Why did they leave? As far as they knew, you know, the body of Jesus was still somewhere around Jerusalem. This is where everything happened. This is where he was crucified. This is where all their people are. This is where the rumors are starting. This is where they've heard that there was angels just seen, and these two leave. Why did they leave? Well, because of what we had read there. We had hoped we had hoped. We were hoping. We're not hoping anymore. We had hoped, but not now. We thought he was the one to redeem Israel. But it was actually our own leaders. It was our chief priests. It was our leaders who gave him over. So even if he was the one, the ones who needed to recognize him didn't recognize him and had him crucified. And now he's gone. We had hoped. And now he's gone. And so they're walking in this direction, away from Jerusalem, towards maybe their hometown. I don't know where they're going to stay. In Emmaus is their village, perhaps. And as they're walking along, and Jesus comes up and he starts to talk to them and ask what they're discussing, which, I don't know, I would find a little off-putting. You know, if you're walking and talking with a friend and someone else comes up and says, well, what are you guys talking about? I'm like, well, it's none of your business. But actually, what happens here is they're so overcome with sorrow. They're so brokenhearted that we actually have a description of exactly what happened when Jesus says, what are you talking about? They just stop. You know, they're walking, talking. Jesus comes up, I don't know, walking a little faster or something, I don't know. Comes up. What are you guys talking about? And they just stop. And they turn around. Are you serious? Where have you been? Are you the only visitor in all of Jerusalem that doesn't know what's going on? I mean, the irony is so, so good, right? It's so, so good. Are you the only one who doesn't know? Are you just a visitor to Jerusalem? Oh, I made Jerusalem, you know? I've been here a time or two. And it would have been like, I don't know if it's tempting for Jesus to just like, ta-da, you know. I don't know why he did it this way. But he let them not know who he was as they just grappled in sorrow with broken hearts, walking the wrong way away from Jerusalem, walking there with broken hearts and said, don't you know what happened? Don't you know about the things? And then, man, I mean, you just want to crawl out of your seat at this point when Jesus goes, what things? You know? I don't want to read too much into this word, things. But you might have noticed a little bit. I mean, it's just things. It's just a word, right? I had the Greek. I looked it up. It means things. They were talking about these things with each other. We read a minute ago. Jesus says, what are you talking about? Are you the only one who doesn't know these things? And Jesus says, what things? And then, of course, they explained. And then Jesus said, you know, silly guys, you didn't know that the Messiah had to suffer these things? I mean, I understand it's just a generalization, kind of like for all the stuff that's happening, all the things that are going on. But when he said to them, don't you know that the Christ had to suffer these things? What he's saying is, earlier he said, what things? And their answer was, here was the one that we had hoped in. He was going to redeem Israel. He was taken, he was crucified, and now he's gone. Those were the things. But Jesus knew there were much, much bigger things happening. There were a lot more things than they thought. The things that they thought were really important, but those things weren't the things. Jesus knew there was other things, and I'm actually going to turn over to Colossians chapter 1, and I want you to hear what the things are all about there. He, Jesus, is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For by him all things were created, things in heaven, on earth, visible and invisible. Whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things were created by him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together. And he is the head of the body, the church. He is the beginning and the firstborn from among the dead, so that in everything he may have the supremacy. For God was pleased to have his fullness dwell in him, and so through him to reconcile to himself all things, whether things on earth or things in heaven, whether or by making peace through his blood shed on the cross. You see, what was happening on the cross, what happened in the grave, what happened in the resurrection of Jesus Christ is that the one who is the image of the invisible God was reconciling all things to himself. And so even though they saw the things of beating and of murder and of torture and of crucifixion and of burial, and they saw the horrible things that took place there, and they saw the things that happened as Jesus was put into that tomb, and then they started to hear things about the tomb being empty and the body being gone, and all of the other things, the curtain and the dead people coming out of the grave and the earthquakes and the sun. I mean, there's so many things. Are you the only one who doesn't know the things that have been happening, Jesus? And Jesus is the firstborn from among the dead. He's the one who's before all things, and in him all things hold together. And what he was accomplishing was reconciling all things to himself, which means that there on the cross he was taking in himself all broken things that come from sin, that produced death, and that produced hatred, and that produced wickedness, and that produced disease, and that produced depression, and that produced crime, and that produced heartbreak, and that produced loss, and alienation, and separation, and loneliness, and all the things that people around us carry all the time. Jesus was reconciling all things to himself, making a way that all things, wrong things, hard things, broken things, unjust things, all the things that make this earth so hard right now, he is reconciling to himself through his shed blood on the cross. And there was no other way that they would ever be reconciled. There was never going to be an answer except that he did that. And then he was raised to life again. What things? I don't know where I am. And I can't see. Well, thank you so much. From one crier to another. That's really great. That's good. One of these days, we'll make it. Verse 28 through 35. Let's read that. Let's read on. As they approached the village to which they were going, Jesus continued on as if he were going farther. But they urged him strongly, "Stay with us, for it is nearly evening, and the day is almost over." So he went and he stayed with them. And while he was at the table with them, he took bread, gave thanks, and broke it, and began to give it to them. And then their eyes were opened, and they recognized him, and then he disappeared from their sight. Man, that would have been frustrating. They asked each other, "Were not our hearts burning within us while he talked with us on the road and opened the scriptures to us?" And then they got up and they returned at once to Jerusalem. And there they found the 11 and those with them assembled together and saying, "It is true, the Lord has risen and has appeared to Simon." And then the two told what happened on the way and how Jesus was recognized by them when he broke bread. I know we would have loved so much to be able to hear Jesus explain from the scripture all the things concerning himself from the Old Testament through the prophets and the Psalms. What an amazing thing it would be to be able to hear Jesus explain all of that. And I've heard people express a little bit of frustration that we don't have that sermon in here, you know, and I feel that too. But I just want to point out we do. He just says, go get it. It's there. All of the ways that the prophets and the book of the law and the Psalms and the books of poetry and the wisdom of the Proverbs, the entire Old Testament, and then all into the New Testament, Jesus is on every single page. All of it points to him. All of it leads to him. And he is fulfilling all things in this book. So we don't get to hear the specific message that he gave to these guys, but it's all here, and he says, go get it. I think the more frustrating part would be when he finally opens their eyes and they go, oh, it's Jesus. Are you kidding me? I just saw him and he's gone, right? But then they walked back and they hurried back. So here's the picture, and here's kind of what I just draws me to this passage here today. That the disciples and everyone who loved Jesus were coming into this time hearing some things from women and hearing some things from the other disciples who saw the empty tomb, but they couldn't understand it. They couldn't process any of it. He was gone, and all they had were broken hearts, and because of the rumors, most of them stayed, but these two, they left. They couldn't take it, and they're walking this road to Emmaus with broken hearts, but then they see Jesus, and in seeing Jesus in the scripture, by giving thanks and in broken bread, now they're flying back down the same road. And they were going this way a minute ago with arms hanging low and shoulders drooping and downcast faces. They were brokenhearted on this road. And now they are running down the 7 miles in the other direction. And they're being carried as they run because now they've got burning hearts instead. Now, what made the difference between the two? They saw Jesus. How did they see Jesus? Now, don't say to yourself, well, they saw him, there he was, and so if I could only see him like they saw him, then I would feel the same way too. Don't say that, because remember, they only saw him for just a split second. It was just a moment, just a flash, long enough to realize that was him. But the way that they saw Jesus was in the word, and in giving thanks, and in the breaking of bread. Those were the only things that happened. They saw Jesus revealed in the word. They saw Jesus giving thanks. And they saw Jesus as he broke bread. And this is what we have. This is what we have. We have the same thing. We know that this is our Jesus, that he really is with us on the brokenhearted road. And seeing him through the word and through giving thanks and through broken bread, we can fly back the other direction. Here's the point. Emmaus is a two-way street. Emmaus goes both directions. You can walk Emmaus Road with a broken heart, or you can run Emmaus Road with a burning heart. And the difference is seeing Jesus in his word, clinging to his words, giving thanks, and breaking of bread, remembering this is what this was all about all along. He's reconciling to himself all things. He broke his body. And so literally they watched the broken bread break bread for them. And now they're flying back, the same road they were just walking on. Now they're flying back with burning hearts. And they're saying, I felt it. Didn't you feel it? When he began to explain it, I started to feel it. It was like my broken, dead heart was like awakening. And now I can't stop. I want you to see one other important thing, though. That even though they turned there having seen Jesus the way they did, did you know there's actually doubt in this story on both sides of the road? It's not that they were walking with broken hearts and this end in Emmaus is where the doubt was. And then they ran back and here in Jerusalem there was no doubt. That's not true. If you read even what happens next, Jesus shows up. They're having this conversation. And all of a sudden Jesus, poof, he's right there behind closed doors with the disciples. He says, peace be with you. You know, and they all jump and they're startled and they're afraid. And he says, no, don't be afraid. It's me. It's really me. And they're like trying to figure out what they're seeing. They've heard this. They're in the middle of talking about how different people are seeing him, but now he's here. And Luke actually tells us it was for amazement and joy that they didn't believe at that point. It was so good to see him that actually made it hard for them to believe him. It was for amazement and joy that all of a sudden they couldn't believe him. And he took such good care of them in that. He challenges us when we need to be challenged. He says, hey, Don't you remember? Remember what I said? Don't be foolish. Don't forget what I told you. But he also takes such great care of them. He says, hey, do y'all have anything to eat? That happens next in the story. Do you have something to eat? And they're like, well, we got some fish. All right, I was hoping for a burger, some pizza, something good. Fish will do. And so they give him some fish, and he eats it, and he says, see, look, a ghost doesn't eat. Feel my hands, touch my feet. You can tell this is really me. I'm really here. And they're all in wonder and amazement, but they're all still struggling, wrestling with some of this too. And even as he continues to appear to them and hundreds of others over the next 40 days, it eventually comes to the place where he leaves them from the Mount of Olives. And in Matthew 26, or 28 rather, there's this moment that I just find so, so incredible and honestly so encouraging for hearts like mine. In Matthew 28, verse 16, the 11 disciples went to Galilee, to the mountain that Jesus had told them to go. And when they saw him, they worshiped, but some doubted. And right then is where Jesus gives them the Great Commission. And he says, hey, all authority has been given unto me. Therefore, go and make disciples of all nations, teaching them to, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, teaching them to obey everything that I've commanded you. And I'm with you to the very end of the age. So here's the point. They had doubts as they were brokenhearted, of course. We had hoped he was the one. He wasn't, we thought. And then they saw him in giving thanks and in the word and in broken bread. Their hearts were lit up. They were elated. Their hearts were burning. They're flying back. But even some of them there, having spent that time with Jesus, even as they were worshiping, they still had doubts. Now, a very surreal thing happened to me the other day. I was thinking about this verse. And it started to just sort of percolate in my mind, and I was thinking about how they had already had the scriptures open to them. They had seen everything that had happened. They by now had spent time with the risen Jesus, and they're literally worshiping him together. And while they're worshiping, there's some doubt there too. And it's just striking me, right? And I'm thinking, wow, that's amazing. I don't know, some of us feel like that sometimes. I was just thinking about that, and then I thought, you know, this feels familiar. I feel like, when was the last time we talked about this? And so I looked up in some of my notes, and I found that I preached a message on this less than a year ago. And that was stunning to me, in part because it's always a little discouraging to realize just how fully and completely I forget so many things. Like utterly, totally lost. I had no idea that I had preached that message before. But sure enough, there it was. I found the notes and I listened to it. And what was really surreal is that, well, first of all, I don't generally do that. It's not usually a great feeling when you go back. I'm just saying, that's just kind of how it works, you know. But I listened to it. And honestly, God really met me and encourage me. And it was surreal because it was in my voice. I don't remember saying any of it. But he just ministered to me to remind me, and I want to remind you this morning, that on one direction, there's doubt and heartbreak. On the other direction, there might be some doubt too. But what's different between the two is that one involves worship. And so rather than being, you know, feeling like I'm the broken one here and everyone else has got it together, you know, do you feel that way sometimes? Everyone's worshiping and everyone just seems like they've got it together, and here I am, I'm feeling discouraged or I'm feeling heartbroken, I feel doubt or whatever, and then we start to sort of disqualify ourselves and count ourselves out and distance ourselves. Rather than doing that, what if that doubt is meant to pull us closer to Jesus? What if it's meant to be mixed together with our worship? To be honest, to say, I'm doubting, I'm afraid, I'm frustrated, I'm discouraged, but God, you're wonderful. Jesus, you are reconciling all things to yourself. I don't understand what you're doing. I don't understand why you're doing it. Sometimes I wonder, honestly, are you really real? Am I just making this up? But I worship you, Jesus. I worship you, Jesus, because you are before all things and you will be after all things and you sustain all things by the word of your power and you're fulfilling all things. And I just love you. And I don't know if you're there all the time, but I love you and I worship you. And so mingling and mixing that doubt that we really have together with worship brings us to a place where we see him more and more clearly, instead of letting those doubts take us away from him and run from him and get discouraged and distant and confused and detached. You see what I'm saying? So I want to encourage you in my own heart that, yeah, there's doubts. Yeah, there's frustration, there's fears, there's brokenness, there's all of that. Listen, they're meant to draw you closer to him, not to drive you away from him. That's what they're for, to draw you closer to the one who is reconciling all things to himself through his shed blood on the cross. I saw yesterday, I was going to a store. And I went to I stopped at a stoplight. And in Wake Forest, where I live, we have these stoplights. They're really special, where they will cycle multiple times without letting you go anywhere. And I'm sitting there at this light, and all of a sudden, there's like you can hear it and you can feel it. There's like this huge group of motorcyclists coming across the road where I'm waiting at the red light, and it just keeps going and going and going, and they're just. I mean, there's, I don't know, 50 of them, there's 100, I don't know how many. There's so many. They just go, and so loud and strong and just awesome looking, you know? I mean, I'm kind of excited about that, and I'm watching it, and I'm like, this is amazing. And off they go, and then it gets a little tiresome, and they keep going. And then the light turned red on them before their whole group. They only had a few left. The light turned red on them before the whole group made it, and the rest of them kind of went on. These guys, they'll be fine. They'll catch up. We're waiting, the light cycles, turns green again. But in the process of them waiting there, or in the time that they were waiting there for just a moment, there's this poor guy, had nothing to do with these dudes. He was riding a scooter. And it's not his fault. He was just doing whatever he had to do, minding his own business, and he was probably thinking, while that light was red, please let them go. Please let them go. I do not want to pull up with them. But a guy came up and he's like, honest, I just pull up. And as he pulls up on the scooter, then the light turns and all the rest of them go, and they're gone, you know? And I'm sitting there watching this and I think, you know, how many people come here together as a part of a church family and it's Sunday and it's time to worship or you're in a Bible study or you're with your family and you just feel like, you know, everyone else is like on these hogs, you know? Everyone's just tooling along and they're strong. And here I am. And I'm stuck on a scooter. You know? And I don't have what everyone else has. Or I'm carrying something that just hurts. It seems like everyone else has got it. Maybe I just don't really belong. And all I'm trying to do as we close today is just to remind you, if you have doubts, if you have hurts, if you have worries, if you have fears, if you have brokenness, if you have sin, you're in the right place. You belong. Because Jesus is reconciling all things to himself. So by all means, walk the Emmaus road. But don't walk it towards Emmaus. Walk it towards Jerusalem. Walk it towards where Jesus is. Run fast. Run hard. Bring your doubts. Worship along the way. Let's walk with burning hearts, not broken ones, not because we've got it together and we're the ones, but because he's the one and he's pulling it all together. Hallelujah. Jesus, we love you and we depend on you. We have no one else. We have nowhere else. There's nothing else that we can lean on but you. Lord, when we've leaned on ourselves, when I lean on myself, it doesn't work well. When we lean on other things, it doesn't work well. But you said in your word that the one who puts their trust in you will never be put to shame. We will never regret putting our trust in you. We will never regret bringing our doubts to you. So Lord Jesus, I pray over my church family here, and I pray that for everyone who's carrying a broken heart today, that we will carry it straight to you. And for everyone who's just living in the thrill of a burning heart of passion for you, Lord, may we run together, pull each other along, encourage one another, build one another up. Because every single one of us knows what it's like to walk the brokenhearted road and to walk the burning heart road. We need each other to pursue you, and I pray that you will lead us into you and help us to hold fast to you and find that you are really alive and you are our living God.